Welcome back to the Charlie Jade Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Richard Porter.
And I'm Kevin Batchelder.
And we have returned to continue our discussion about Charlie Jade. Now, since the series works as a chapterized story, we're going to break this up into chapters or acts. And this first episode is going to cover the story so far from episodes 1 through episodes 5. And I think that'll give us a good overview of the series and allow us to talk a little bit about some of the developments, character developments, situational developments, and hopefully entice you into going, finding this series and watching it.
Oh goodness, we could go in so many. I mean, it's a case of where you've got such and Richard did such a great job in some of the recaps he wrote up, but I mean, it's such a cinematic series that it almost visually looks like a movie. I mean, the score is so haunting and not like something you generally hear in TV, that they tried to tackle, you know, multiple universes in a TV show of this nature and such a different kind of story is just certainly just some of the things that certainly grabbed me right from the early parts of the story.
I think what's interesting here is if you start with the pilot, obviously, it's a pilot and wants to introduce us to the world or worlds in this case. And it's not particularly action intense. You've got a private investigator who's looking for, you know, he looks for missing persons. And he doesn't do a lot in the pilot. And not a whole lot happens. There's no car chases. There's no big fights. There's no gun battle. But at the end of it, after he's tracked down the person he believes is responsible for actually killing a young girl, he ends up in the middle of a huge industrial accident and ends up finding himself transported to another universe. That's a pretty exciting way to end that first hour, especially since that first hour isn't particularly exciting. That first hour is very contemplative, thoughtful. It's very noir. The thing about Charlie Jade, as we said in our preview of it, and as we'll say always, is it's a noir show about a private investigator who happens to be from another dimension, another universe. But when you get that final big change at the end and he ends up being transported to our universe, you know that you're in for something very, very different. Honestly, my honest opinion is the next couple of episodes kind of let us down. They kind of dropped the ball a little bit. It seems to me that particularly someone whose job is investigating, but even a run-of-the-mill person who suddenly found themselves thrust into another universe would be much more active and reactive than Charlie will be over the next 2 or 3 episodes. He's investigating. He's trying to find his way back home, but it doesn't feel to me that he does it necessarily as quickly as he should or could until we get to the 5th episode, and then things change very, very quickly. The world of the show and the way we perceive it changes very, very quickly in one scene, you know, as Owen Boxer pours a bottle of water over his head. That changes our perception of what this show is and is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Now, I actually disagree with Charlie's actions once he's shifted universes. I think he's in shock. He doesn't understand what's going on. He thinks he's losing his mind. He's just sort of going along with the flow until he wakes up. That's it seems like his game plan was, okay, I'm imagining all this. I'm in a coma somewhere. This is made up. I don't know what's going on. I'll just go with it and see where it takes me. And it's not until he realizes that the girl who was killed came from that world and that someone he knows is actually responsible for her death that he starts to figure out, okay, maybe this is something more. And then it all crystallizes when he sees O1 transport using the water. And that's when he realizes these universes are connected and can be traveled between. It's not something that's in his head. This is real. And so it takes him that time to figure it out. And even though he's a detective, he's an average guy. Pretty grounded, pretty jaded from what we saw in the first episode. Very, very jaded. So they might have stretched the fish out of water thing a little bit long, but it made sense to me when everything crystallized at the beginning of the fifth episode.
And I also think it's really, to me, fascinating that talking about him being, totally fish out of water, you've also got Rena's situation and hearing her having to deal with the, oh my God, I'm totally out of my element. I have no idea why. And it kind of gets you to think, well, gee, that's a pretty big thing. It's one thing to watch what you kind of think is the main character of a show stuck in a situation. You almost expect that as a viewer, but to see someone else there, you start to put yourself almost in her shoes and think, wow, that would really be something. And then you're a bit of a metaphor for what Charlie is, because this show expects you to keep up, folks. There are no exposition. You don't get a little primer. You are dropped right in the middle of this, and they expect you to be trying to keep up. I mean, that's where it was very fascinating that, oh, this is not dumbed down. I better be paying attention. I should rewatch this again before I move to future episodes. That was what really hooked me in that sense, too.
Mm-hmm. I think Rena's story is actually more compelling during this segment because she knows that there's multiple universes. She knows what's going on. She knows she's stuck. And I don't know, the camera work in Power of Suggestion, where she's injured and disoriented, that just drew me in. The composition of the scene there, the camera's fuzzing around and swinging around, sort of giving you a very visceral feel for her nausea and her disorientation was brilliant. And then the way later in that episode, when it was copied, when Charlie had his little dissociative moment, that struck me as going, whoa, you have to, he's like, I want to just shake people and go, you have to watch this right here, please.
Yeah, again, it's the sci-fi without looking like sci-fi. You come in knowing there's multiple universes, but you're not looking at that. You're drawn into the characters and what they're doing. And as you were saying, yeah, it's slow. It's got to take its time getting there. Don't be looking for explosions and gunfights and stuff. So you start to get into that pace and realize that I should be paying attention to everything that's going by on the screen. And as you're saying, you're taken and seeing the different way it's shot to really appreciate that this is a visual experience too. So it's a different pace. You have to get into a different gear, I think, certainly in my rewatches, to start appreciating some of those things. Used to a lot of American television, go, go, fast, fast, and we're going to tell you exactly what we're going to do. And you have to realize that this is a different gear, and you have to really appreciate it that way. And then you can start thinking, if I was Charlie or I was Rena, or, you know, would I have understood what's going on by now? And maybe not. And, you know, what does that all mean to me? And plus you got Charlie who, as you pointed out, we really don't like him from the get-go. He's not a hero that we want to get behind and hope he's okay. You almost wish he ends up in the ditch sometimes. You know, so that's a different take on it. That's part of the fun of saying, do I really care about this guy or will I? And then that's where you get challenged as we move into the later episodes, because certain characters start, you get a switch on who's the good guy, the bad guy, and is there good and bad?
Yeah, I mean, the only reason that we like Charlie at all, besides the fact that the show holds his name, is that he's charismatic. I mean, Jeffrey Pierce is a charismatic actor, and he brings that through. He brings through that sense that, all right, this is a guy, I think I want to like this guy, despite the fact that I don't like the way he acts. You know, he ends up in our universe, he ends up in Betaverse, and he spots a doppelganger for his girlfriend from back home. So he starts almost stalking her, and he almost beats the crap out of her dad with a cricket bat, you know, just the way a confrontation falls down. And that's not exactly the kind of behavior we want in our heroes or expect from our heroes. But somehow, you know, he pulls it off in a way that we don't totally despise him for it. In fact, Paula doesn't totally despise him for it, even though he almost beat her dad up with a cricket bat. You know, she seems to find this mysterious guy as interesting as we do.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that softens the hard edge of Charlie in these opening episodes is his scenes with Jasmine in Alpha. You see how much he cares for her. He cares about her. He takes care of her. And you see how much it shook up her world when he disappeared. And you start to realize that the effect he had on her life in a positive way, there has to be something good about him.
I think the other thing that helps too is in Betaverse is the presence of Carl Lubinsky. Carl's a naive and believing kind of person in some ways. You know, he sees conspiracy theories everywhere. Turns out that a lot of those conspiracy theories he sees really are there, but because of that, because of his open nature, his lack of cynicism to a certain extent, his trust that there can be good in people and that he's capable of perceiving that good in people. You know, he in a lot of ways is our proxy to Charlie. Carl trusts Charlie. He's not sure exactly what the story is with him, but he trusts him and he wants to help him and he's gonna go along for the ride. So we go along for the ride too. But actually get back to Rena for a second, and I don't think I'd ever thought of her this way before, but in a lot of ways, for those familiar with Battlestar Galactica, she's almost like Callie. She is just a whipping boy for the writers. Every bad thing that happens happens to Rena. You know, Rena gets thrust from, you know, a paradise to an okay place, but not a paradise, to our world. You know, Rena gets beaten up. Rena gets kidnapped. Rena gets attacked. Rena gets assaulted. Everything bad happens to her. You know, it's Charlie's story, and Charlie's having an easy time of it. He just wants to go home because he misses Jasmine and, you know, his swank apartment in the sky. But here, the food tastes better. Here, the air is cleaner. Here, the sky is blue. So as bad as Charlie thinks it is for Charlie, it's nothing like it is for Rena.
Yeah, the scenes where Rena just goes from lost to hurt to chased to captured, to interrogated and tortured and brainwashed, was a relentless progression. And the torture of her, or torture / brainwash of her, it was hard to watch in a couple of places. I was like, whoa, dude, this was on TV.
Yeah, it was very well done. And that's, as you were saying, the real entertainment part was you would see Charlie and almost feel bad that he was stuck in this other verse, and then you'd see Rena and you'd go, okay, Charlie, you know, suck it up. you haven't got much going on here. And then you'd have, as you were saying, Richard, you have Carl just being the, you know, it's all an alien conspiracy and hoping that Charlie's going to turn out to be from Pluto or something and confirm his crazy ideas. And you're thinking, you're just way too trusting, dude. You're going to get yourself in trouble. So you had a little bit of the get a clue, Carl, you know, when's that going to happen kind of thing. And there was just enough story happening with him getting info on Krog and other things that he kept trying to hope that around the next corner was that spaceship he was going to see. So it kept you going in those different directions each time with the different characters. And this is just the first few episodes before we've really even seen a lot of them.
And I think Carl provides an excellent sort of observer thread throughout this, because he knows Charlie is more than what he seems, even though Charlie doesn't believe it yet. And he turns out to be an investigator and a conspiracy theory nut. This is something he's been waiting his whole life for, and it was practically dropped right in his lap. It's like, are you an alien? What is this? And then finding out all of these little things, you know, the technology, when Charlie found the bug and showed it to him, he says, see this? That's when Carl went from where's the bigger conspiracy to, oh my God, what did I get myself into?
Yeah, absolutely. And even it's interesting, you know, talking about the many layers of this series, you know, we're covering the first five episodes here and we've been at this for several minutes and we haven't even talked yet about 01. And that's a whole nother discussion we could do for hours about that character and how it interacts here. So, how's that for some introductions of a character and where we see him often people early on and looking like literally the devil himself?
O-1 Boxer. Oh, yeah. He is definitely my favorite character. Michael Filipowicz is a crazy man. A little bit crazy, not a lot crazy, just a little bit crazy in real life. And he found a way to make an absolutely insane character make perfect sense. Owen Boxer is sociopathic, and he beats people up for small reasons, for seemingly no provocation. He kills people. He does whatever he wants to do, and he has the power to do whatever he wants to do, which is, you know, what we find in the fifth episode. He has that power to do whatever he wants to do because he can be in any of the three universes. He is the only one who can travel. After that accident that caps off the pilot, there is no more link between the three universes that anyone can use. The only one who can travel anymore is O1 Boxer. What's interesting about O1 Boxer is he's a different man in the three universes.
And that was the most compelling thing, because you figure he's a sociopath in one universe, he'll be completely the same in the others. But it's almost like the air or the water or just the very energy of that different dimension brings forth a different side to him. Because you see him as the crazy wild child killing the bar owner. And then later you see him as the jealous, barely contained, but business interested son of the owner. And then later on in the fourth episode or fifth episode, he's in Gamma, and he's almost like a priest. And you're going, huh? Where'd that come from?
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw that scene with him on the beach in Gamma, when they're talking about putting the prison out on the island or something.
Yeah, and they're talking about Robben Island.
Yeah, and I remember watching, and I had to go back and rewind, because up till that point, you're right, all we had seen was the psychopath, and all of a sudden he's talking very softly, and he seems very concerned, and I was like, wait a minute, that is, what's going on here? It just mm-hmm. totally caught me off guard.
And he appears almost heartbroken that they're talking about putting, you know, building prisons in Gamma. And that dichotomy, that complete diversion from what we had seen him in the first four episodes, that, you know, that makes you sit up and pay attention and go, okay, there's a whole lot more to this guy too. What's going on?
Yeah, because at first I thought, okay, well, maybe he's just putting on a face for something. And then I'm like, no, it doesn't seem like it is. And then that's where I went, okay, here we go. I got a whole nother angle I got to be paying close attention to. So that's, again, the richness of the series just starting to develop in all these different directions.
Yeah, I had spoken with Michael Filipowicz during the run on Sci-Fi. I had the opportunity to interview him. And, you know, I want to read something he said about the way he played O1. There was so much going on in Gamma that you didn't see. In Freudian terms, higher self, Gamma, lower self, Alpha, and the mask was Beta. It's like when a man goes out to an S&M club, gets loaded, things get out of hand, but he has self-awareness and a mission and a longing. Days later, he stumbles home to his clean wife and his adoring, obedient children. In Gamma, O1 is who he is. Alpha and Beta are his exorcisms. So I find that to be a really interesting take on the character. It's not the same take that the creators had for the character, but that doesn't really matter, because he was the one up on screen making himself look like a crazy man. So he sort of won, I think.
I think so. Oh, and yeah. for any listeners who have not yet read the interview that Richard did with Michael Filipowicz, you can read that at either popcritics.com or charliej.net. Definitely, definitely worth the read.
Yeah, absolutely. And if any of you are coming into our fan podcast here and have not listened to the creator commentaries that Bob Wertheimer did, by all means, as you're watching, you know, cue those up after you watch the episodes, because it's just going to bring even more richness out. Now, some of the things you had mentioned, I think, Richard, earlier on, which are interesting in the bigger scope, but some of the story items that were kind of brought up and then maybe not taken down the road for various reasons that we know about, did those throw any of you folks off? You know, the little blue stones, or, you know, some of the guys in black trailing Charlie. I mean, some of these things that we kind of saw and then disappeared.
Well, the part of that is the change in the creative crew. I mean, the writers team changed. I think it was episode 10 or 11, and then there's a little bit of weird carryover where the new writing team had to clean up and finish an episode here or there from the old writing team. So there was a lot that got dropped. Not all of it totally did. I mean, the Blue Stones, Alex Epstein's explanation on those, he was the second showrunner. His explanation is, it's like, just radioactive stuff left over from the, Link. So I don't think that was what the original writers had in mind for the Blue Stones, but, it still at least kind of made sense. As for those men in the gray suits, they do still kind of show up. They're kind of there, then they disappear for a while. We do see them right near the very end of the first season, and that's brought back in. I'm sure that's a retcon, the way they were brought back in, but I think it was a very effective retcon. It felt to me organic, as though, oh yeah, that's exactly what the men in gray were always supposed to be.
Hmm.
It didn't feel like they just tried to stick it in there. I mean, not everyone may agree with me, but it felt organic. One of the things, the show, like I said, has a very much slower pace. I've said it's, the Mad Men of science fiction. It moves not glacially, but it moves slow enough so that you have to pay a lot of attention. There's a lot happening all the time. It's just not a lot of action happening all the time necessarily. When Charlie first lands in, seems odd to say land, when Charlie first phases to Betaverse and is woken up, he's woken up by his little girl Jody. She's kind of a strange little girl, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years old, lives out in the desert, and she wonders if he's one of the invisible people, which it's kind of odd. And since we know what just happened, we know what happened at the end of the pilot, we know that there are other universes, we certainly hear her say that and say, oh, maybe she's seen other people move back and forth before, but maybe not take a whole lot of pay a whole lot of attention to it. Charlie apparently paid enough attention to it so that when episode 5 comes along and he realizes this is all real, there really is something strange going on. I just saw one boxer disappear by pouring a bottle of water over his head. He goes and finds Jody. And, Jody gives him the lessons that he needs in understanding who the invisible people are, that she's not just a crazy little girl who has imaginary friends, that really she has seen people from other universes come here and leave here, and we'll see Jody again. So it's that sort of, it's not that we saw her in the beginning of episode 2 and then by the end of episode 2 Charlie knew what he was going to do and he was on the run doing something. It's that we saw her at the beginning of episode 2 and we'll see her again in 3 weeks and we'll start to learn more, and we'll see her again a few weeks after that when Charlie starts to learn more about what's going on.
Yeah, it was nice to see some of that woven throughout at different points, and whether for writing staff changes or whatever, it's also nice to know that not every little breadcrumb you see will ever pay off. And that's, again, that would mean too simple for, and that's not what we have in a show like this. We're going to have some items thrown at us that are just going to be loose end threads, and which makes for some of the entertainment, so you can't think you can latch onto that and you'll be able to follow it all the way through. It just won't happen.
Now, when I say there's very little action, I should probably clarify that a little bit. I mean, there's some action. I know Summer said she just, before we started recording, she'd said she just watched The Power of Suggestion again recently. That's a pretty fun little episode with, there's a riot at a funeral.
Don't see that every day.
Nope.
You don't always see, corpses getting tossed out of their coffins for some odd reason. And people getting kidnapped from funerals, and someone like 01 Boxer brainwashing someone. So that's not something you see every day. And there is some action there. There's also a fantastic close quarter fight in episode 5.
Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah, that bathroom fight was to, pardon the phrase, to die for. I mean, from an action point of view, for a show that doesn't have much action, that was an amazing fight to watch.
As someone who's a fan of action movies, that scene was very well shot. It wasn't too close. It wasn't too far away. and the frame changes for the action, for the perspective of, you know, when the advantage in the fight shifted between the protagonists, it was very, very nicely done. And, you know, you got the sense that Charlie could hold his own, but he was overmatched the longer the fight went on. And seeing that turn, you know, where the hero isn't automatically, you know, winning the fight and hands down, I thought that was a very, very nice touch.
The other thing I think really makes that fight work so well is, you know, because it's a fight in a bathroom, and, you know, they break the toilet, they break a pipe, there's water everywhere. We started this episode seeing what water can do in the world of the show Charlie Jade. And there's a moment during this fight where, look, I know Charlie Jade's not going to die. Charlie Jade he's the star of the show. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be dead. He's going to somehow survive this fight. But there's a moment in this fight with all this water that I'm not positive Charlie's winning this fight. And I was wondering, is Charlie about to phase out and go to another universe? Is he about to travel to another universe? Is that how he's going to survive this fight?
That was a thought I had too, when it looked like, you know, he was done in the toilet and he's reaching and you see his arm getting weaker. I'm like, is he just going to relax and shift? What's going on here?
Leading, you know, that whole, I mean, water and its importance in the series, but also certainly in that episode 5, since we see O-1 travel with it and Charlie get his butt kicked in a whole lot of it. And then at the very end of that episode, when he can barely walk and he thinks he might have that way, that he's figured out how to do this, and then the sheer disappointment of it not working.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's maybe for me when I kind of felt certainly a little more for the character, even if I didn't like him. I mean, what he had to go through and thinking maybe he had found the key, and then to have it not work in the middle of the sand dunes, that was, I thought, a very nice way to phase out on that episode.
Yeah, I think that's a nice way to close out. To close out this first chapter, first act of Charlie Jade, is he ends up in Betaverse, doesn't know what's going on, finally starts to get the tiniest hint of what it is, that he's not dreaming, he's not in a coma, this is real, and look, there is a way home. And then the realization, no, there may be a way home, I don't know what it is.
Well, I think we've hit upon all the major points for this first act. And I know a lot of our listeners have had questions over the time that we've done this podcast, or since the commentaries came up. If you have any questions for us, go to charliejade.net, click on the contact form, and send us an email. All three of us will get it, and we'll try to address your questions in the next episode or in the forums. We have a forum over at farpointforums.com. Look for the Charlie Jade podcast forum. Feel free to ask questions in there. I know Kevin's in there a couple times a week answering people. but I think that, unless you guys have something last to add, I think that'll do it for this episode.
No, I think that covered what I think is relevant to this first group of five. I think that should hopefully, to anyone who maybe watched one or two episodes, you know, sorry we gave you a couple spoilers there, but hopefully this entices you to say, well, you know, maybe I should watch a couple more and see what it's like.
If you have the means, definitely check out the first five episodes. Now, I have it on good authority that on March 10th, 2009, Sci-Fi Channel will be running a marathon of the first 8 episodes. So set your DVRs accordingly.
Set your DVRs and be sure to watch them. Be sure within that first 72 hours that you play those episodes.
Send your cards and letters to Sci-Fi Channel. Hey, give us a DVD set.
Yes.
Yeah, get us a U.S. release. Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode. And we will be back soon to talk about episodes 6 through 10, what we call Chapter 2.
That sounds great. It's good talking with you guys.
Talk to you soon.
For even more news, information, and conversations about the amazing worlds of Charlie Jade, visit charliejade.net. This has been a Farpoint Media production.